Welcome to a podcast of Aurelia Community Church, where we desire to bring the whole gospel to the whole person, to the whole world, proclaiming the liberating power of the gospel as we grow, serve, and go. Join us in this message as we look to the scriptures, seeking to be transformed into the image of Christ.
If you haven't met them already, as our OCC children, or OCC kids, and OCC youth pastor. And so this morning, I've asked them both to come and share. And they're going to share some of their journey, some of their story. So we get a sense, a picture of how God has worked in their lives and brought them to this place. And so I think, Brent, you're starting things off. So come on up. I'll let you adjust that mic how you need it to be.
I saw that Mike also uses an iPad, so I figured it was a good fit to be here. And we'll move this down slightly. I want to start off actually by saying thank you. There have been a number of you who have obviously come and introduce yourselves to us, and we promise one day we'll start to remember all of your names. It's going to take some time, but we'll get there. A number of you have offered your help to us in different ways, whether that was helping us to move in or helping even to look after our kids while we kind of unpack a little bit. We are just very grateful for all your help that you've given us. And you've obviously made this transition a much easier one than we kind of imagined this would be. So I must admit, though, that sort of being here in Aurelia at OCC doesn't quite feel real yet. I'm getting there, and I know it's going to take some time to kind of adjust and get used to things. And before long, I'm confident we'll just think of Aurelia as home, and that we've always just kind of, this is where, you know, home is in Aurelia. Except one of the things that we haven't done yet is get through a winter here in Aurelia. So I am, you know, it's funny. As a number of you, especially those of you who didn't grow up in Aurelia, have introduced yourselves to us almost like to a T. Every single person tells us their first winter story. Some of them seem a little scary. So I am hoping and I am praying that I have the most boring first winter story here in Aurelia ever. Probably much to my kids' dismay, but anyhow, I want to have a boring winter story. So this morning, as Mike mentioned, we're going to share a little bit of our faith journey. I'm going to share mine, and Andrew's going to come. And then I'm going to come back again and share a little bit more about my sort of ministry journey, so you can kind of sort of see that side of my life. And I'm just going to talk more about my own personal sort of faith journey as we kind of get going. So I kind of struggled kind of thinking through this about, you know, sort of where do I start sort of this sort of faith journey. And usually the easiest place to start is from the beginning, since none of you really know anything about our story. And I don't think I have a sit-on-the-edge-of-your-seat kind of faith story, faith journey. That's, once you get to know me, you'll know that's not even me as a person. But it's still my story, and it's how God has worked in my life, and, you know, and how he sort of directed me. And, you know, and we look forward, obviously, to the opportunity to learn more about you and your stories and how God has directed you. But sort of this is sort of my story of sort of how God has intersected in our lives and how he's transformed me and Angela and sort of our sort of story of our life. So I spent most of my early childhood in a small town sort of northeast of here called Halliburton. And that's sort of where my mom was from, her family. They all grew up were there, and lots of them still live there to this day. And I have an older brother. So just one sibling, and like most brothers, we fought like any other brothers would fight. But growing up in Halliburton, I think sort of the impact of, when I think about growing up as a kid there, one of the impacts of that, because it's a small town, is that really my brother, he's just 2 years older than me, we basically were each other's best friends. We had friends at school, but we didn't really go off to friends' houses, and we were kind of, our house was really in the middle of nowhere, so we didn't have a lot of people around us other than my cousins and stuff like that. So that's sort of, you know, something I think about in that is sort of the friendship that we were able to sort of develop and carry on even to this day. And I was trying to think of a story of how could I describe growing up in Halliburton. And I'll tell you one story. It's funny, I just thought of another story in my mind right now, but anyhow. that when we eventually moved to Toronto, which I'm going to get to, and told friends sort of what we did, they thought we were, like, completely insane. So we would, in the winter, seeing as we go with a winter theme, winter stories, sort of dig into the side of a snowbank on the road, not on the roadside, but on the opposite side of the road, into the snowbanks that when the plows go along, we would dig forts sort of into them, which was, yeah, it was cool. And then we'd kind of wait around as you kind of dug it out for the snowplow to come along. Now, we lived on a sort of a side road, so the plow probably was going like 40 kilometers an hour as it was driving past the house. But then it would throw like these sort of giant snowballs over the top of the thing, and we'd be in our forts, and it was fun, and all that kind of stuff. And then one time, we decided we would try that and at my grandmother's house. And my grandmother, she lived on the highway. So it really went to a whole new level when the truck is coming along at like 90 kilometers an hour down the highway, and those snowballs are flying over top. Anyhow, we were safe. No one got, you know, hurt or anything like that, but just a little, I don't know, maybe that's what country kids do. Anyhow, so you can tell me your crazy kid stories at some point. So a little bit about my family. My dad, he was sort of the sole wage earner in the family. My mom was a stay-at-home mom, and having kids of our own now, I actually can appreciate kind of what she did and how hard of a job that actually is. And so our family, we did not grow up going to church. I didn't know anything really about church. My only exposure to the Bible, and this kind of maybe will date me a little bit, was that the local pastor would come into the school and, you know, have that opportunity to share sort of Bible stories with the good old felt boards and the felt cutouts and those kinds of things. And to be honest, I paid zero attention to those stories. I didn't really know. I was too busy goofing off to really kind of spend any time listening to that. And then when I was about 11 years old, sort of my world got turned upside down a little bit. My dad had quit his job that he had been at probably for the last like 7 or 8 years. He'd gone through a few different jobs up there, but he'd been in this one for a little while. And he went looking for new work. He tried some different jobs, and nothing really kind of stuck. And so during this time was really my first exposure to someone who was battling sort of a mental health challenge. As a kid, I didn't really kind of know what was going on, but, you know, as an adult, I can sort of see what was going on. So my mom, she didn't handle the challenge, the changes that well, and she was eventually admitted to hospital in Peterborough, and she was there for a few weeks. my dad, he went to Toronto to get work, and he found work at a print shop at the Toronto Real Estate Board, and my brother and I went to live with my grandma for a while until sort of things got sorted out. So after a few weeks in the hospital, my mom, she'd come home, and she kind of kept up weekly visits for a while, and then eventually, together as a family, we all moved to Toronto, and my mom, you know, she's had a few setbacks over the years, but she's in a much better space these days than she was at that time. When I was writing this, I was going to say in Toronto is sort of where God enters the story, but the reality is that God's hand was involved in bringing us to Toronto. A few things happened early on when we moved to Toronto. First, my brother became friends with sort of someone who went to church, who went to youth group, was a really committed believer. His name was Greg. And through that friendship, my brother and I made friends with his brother and his sister, Beth. And oddly enough, seeing as Sean, I see Sean, there's a bit of a connection. You wouldn't even know. I am Greg. So there's a bit of a connection here. Sean, who you guys all know, Sterl, he has a few brothers in his life, but his oldest brother, Keith, actually is married to this Beth, who I've known since she was like 8 years old. And so before she was a Sterl, she was Martin and her two older brothers, I basically spent my entire teen years. Oh, thank you very much. Thank you. And one of the other sort of, so the first sort of big thing was meeting this family, and we spent a lot of time with them. But another thing was that I got a job as a cleaner at this place called Browder Grove Daycare Center. And there I met two men who would change my life fairly dramatically. the one I have to, at the daycare, all the people were called aunts and uncles. So the only way to say this person's name to anybody is just to call him Uncle Wally, because that's how he's known throughout his whole life. So his name is Uncle Wally, and another person who had a big impact was a guy named Paul Offer. So I went really through my entire time of high school working there and going to youth group. I occasionally went to church on Sunday mornings, but I never made a decision to follow Christ. During this time, I worked faithfully at the daycare as a part-time job, had many, many conversations about faith and life, and I would never really connect what God could do for me. My life was going well, everything seemed fine, I didn't, you know, what did I need God for? You know, my talks with Uncle Wally continued, the challenges to my thinking continued from Paul, and still nothing inside me really cried out for a Savior. And so after high school, I went off to college. I received a business diploma. I did the business thing because, because it was something that I understood and kind of came easy to me. It was also to make my mom happy because she always wanted me to be an accountant, and I really didn't want to do that. Not that there's anything wrong with being an accountant, Dan, but it just wasn't for me. It wasn't what God was calling me to do. So I was a bit of a crossroads in my life. And I did what, you know, kind of any 20-year-old would do when they're trying to find their direction in life. I took a year off of school. And I kind of figured, you know, what do I want to do with my life? What do I want to do? So Uncle Wally and Browder Grove kind of stepped up, and they helped me, and they provided me with a full-time job. And I worked a year kind of where I'm trying to figure out this direction of my life. And so early on in that time, the Holy Spirit really started to work on my heart. You know, I was working, I was making money for, you know, a young guy, you know, what could be better. But it was that thinking that really kind of started to gnaw at me. My thinking sort of started to change, you know, was this it? I kind of thought, you know, was this is what life really is all about? Is it just about working and hanging out with friends and having fun? Is there supposed to be more to life than this? And that idea of purpose. The idea that what is the purpose of life really started to weigh on me. And there had to be more to life than just sort of punching a clock, collecting a paycheck. There had to be more than just sort of watching movies and hanging out with my friends. And those seeds that Uncle Wally and Paul had planted in my life were no longer sort of sitting dormant, but were really ready to kind of grow in there. And so God, I feel like he had ordained a time for me and Wally to chat yet again about faith and life. And I was ready. I knew I wanted more to life, that I wanted a life that gave me purpose really each and every day. And the two of us walked through a very pointed conversation, and I told him that I knew I was in need of a rescuer, that I was in need of a Savior. And so that night I gave my life to Jesus. And so here's the thing that nobody tells you when you make a confession of faith and give your heart to Jesus. You don't actually feel any different. Did it take? You know, wasn't Jesus supposed to invade my life? Nothing felt different. It was just sort of this conversation. I wasn't really kind of sure. And so over time, though, I became different. And so that was sort of the, you know, the fruit of seeing what Jesus was doing in my life. So, you know, after I'd asked Jesus into my life, I was given a very great gift. There was a man by the name of Ron Seabrook who was working in the church at the time, and he willingly gave his time and energy and spent a year or so discipling me. I didn't know that's what it was called at that point. I do now. And he had pushed me and challenged me, and I'm forever grateful, really, for the time and energy that he poured into me. And so during this time with Ron, he had challenged me to serve God. You know, after all, each of us are called to use the gifts that God has given us to serve others. And I started out by serving in with the youth of the church. And I found that I really enjoyed working with the youth. And I thought one day, you know, maybe I just want to get involved in youth ministry somehow, in some way. And so life just kind of happened as it has a way of doing. Time got away from me. I kept working to pay for the many different cars that I've gone through in my life. And I was very faithfully attending church and helping out, but I kind of lost my way with sort of the things that I wanted to achieve or maybe what God really kind of wanted to do with my life. But God really had other plans for me. And you know that sort of that footprints in the sand kind of poem where you see the two footsteps of God walking and you're walking beside God. I kind of felt like mine was more like God walking in the sand and then there's two lines behind him as he's dragging me to where he wants me to go. Deuteronomy 31:8 says, "Do not be afraid or discouraged, for the Lord will personally go ahead of you. He will be with you. He will neither fail you nor abandon you." And God was doing that just for me. And as a number of years, I moved on to a new church where a lot of my friends were attending, and I was asked by the youth pastor there if I was interested in serving in the junior high ministry. And I did, and I thought, you know, this was sort of really the first time that I really kind of take ownership within the group, that the youth pastor challenged me to take on more, and he started talking to me a bit more about ministry, and I started reading a bit more about youth ministry and things like that. And after volunteering for a few years, I found out that he was leaving to take a full-time position at another church. And so the senior pastor had asked him if he could recommend anybody sort of from within to take on this new position. And I quite eagerly accepted the position after he recommended me to the senior pastor. And I can obviously talk about more of this later on. But one of the first things that I did, and was really the best decision I've ever made in my whole ministry career, which is maybe saying something that's like in the first couple of weeks, is I recruited this amazing and talented and beautiful junior high leader who just one day ended up being my wife. So a few other tidbits as it relates to my personal faith journey with God. You know, a few things change your life as much as marriage does. This can be obviously at times for the better, and at times we've all seen around us that it can be for the worst. And I'm one of the fortunate ones and can say in all honesty that it has been for the better. Angela has been my biggest supporter in ministry, and she's pushed me to be better and has unwaveringly walked beside me when we had really no idea where God was leading us at times. And so when the Bible talks about sacrificial love in marriage and putting other needs before your own, I can honestly say that I've seen that firsthand. In kids, is there anything that challenges your life more than kids? And I don't know. I haven't even touched the teenage years, so I can only imagine what kind of things are going to happen then. But, you know, you're going to get to know one of our kids, especially. This little fireball redheaded one. Nothing really can test your character more than a little two-year-old who's defiant against you and just says, "No, I am not cleaning up after myself. I don't care what you say. And no, I'm going to walk away from you." And there's times where it's a real challenge. And what do you do? But, you know, I was going to say, you know, you don't want to use that whole rod of discipline thing literally from the Bible where it talks about using a rod to discipline your child. And, you know, at times I feel like you want to do that, but we don't do that. Anyhow, I know I need to exercise patience and love, and so God tests our character through the things that we go through in life in general. And a few other things I just going to highlight that have really kind of shaped and molded sort of me personally. One of the major events in my life over the last while was the death of my father back in 2009. My dad had retired just a few years earlier, and they had moved back to Halliburton. And I remember in the fall of 2008, previous to my father's passing, him and my mom came to visit me to tell me about this condition of having an enlarged abdominal aorta. And I didn't really understand what it was, but I thought this must be serious because they didn't bother just to call me on the phone to talk about this, but they visited me in person. And so thankfully I was married to a nurse who could explain sort of the seriousness of it to me. And so in February 2009, my dad went in for surgery, and unfortunately, he never made it out of the hospital. It was quite hard to lose my father in really such a difficult way, because I don't think I fully realized how potentially dangerous the surgery was. And so I felt really blindsided by the whole thing. I was definitely angry, at first at the surgeon and kind of how things happened, and then I was angry at God. You know, how can a good God do that? You know, that's the question that we always hear people say, right? Sometimes it's difficult here, or where you feel like a good person is taken away from you. God seems so unfair. And those, you know, they don't always hit home until they hit you personally. And then as some time had passed, I could remember a number of people saying during that time, sort of a part of a verse, I guess, of Romans 8:28, which says, "And we know that God causes everything to work together for the good of those who love God and are called according to his purpose to them." So I know what good has come from something that was so painful. I don't think I do yet, but I know that God is using that hurt for his glory in some way. And so to be honest, the other thing sort of within our life over the last few years has been something that's been a very challenging season for us, even as personally and as a couple. And so after I left the first church where I was youth and children's pastor at, to go to Tyndale full-time to complete my bachelor's of religious education, I thought it would be, you know, so easy to find a new ministry position. After all, I had 10 years of experience. I had my education behind me. I mean, who wouldn't want to hire me, right? It quickly became a season of disappointment. In hindsight, you can see where God was leading and how the path ultimately even ends up here. But during that initial time, and as you're going through the season, you know, hearing some churches where I interviewed at say no, and, it kind of quickly crushes your spirit, and you kind of have to happen time and time again. And so during that time, God laid a verse on my heart. 1 Samuel 12:24 says, "But be sure to fear the Lord and faithfully serve him. Think of all the wonderful things he has done for you." So that was what I needed to do. As facing God and what his plan was for us as a family, I'd be willing to serve him wherever he calls us to serve him. Even if it wasn't in ministry anymore, that would be okay. But never forget the ways in which God had already worked in my life. And he had done so much for us, and he was going to bring us to that on his time. And that's my half of the story. I'm going to ask Angel to come and share her half.
I'm a nurse and not a speaker. Let's start there. I was just actually thinking as you were sharing that you don't know what good came out of that. And I think the relationship Nathan has with your mom is what came out of that. So my journey has many interruptions. Yes, you heard that right. I am attending the Women's Bible Study with Priscilla Shriver on Jonah. So it's her wording, not mine. But it's quite fitting as with my story as well. Let's start way back at the beginning. I was born into a missionary family and was fortunate enough to be born and raised in Pakistan. I have a good kid's stories about things that happened in Pakistan and boarding school and changing schools over and over and over and over and over again. But there's only one story I'm going to pick out to tell you today that kind of is where things started. It was during a furlough. I'm not technical. So it was during a furlough spent here in Canada that I answered the call to follow God with my whole life. It was while staying at the night at a supporting family's home, and we were having a sleepover in the basement with the kids, whom we had just met that morning. My, how things have changed. No interviews and dinners and play dates. And we were just settling in for the night, and they put us up in the basement. And I remember hearing noises, and as a parent and as adult now, I knew they were the furnace going on and off and the creaking floors of the parents walking around. But as a kid, I was envisioning monsters and everything creepy crawlies and everything that's scary. And I remember telling this girl, this friend, that I was scared. And I remember she told me that I didn't need to be afraid. If I had asked God to come into my life, He would protect me and I wouldn't need to be fearful anymore. She told me I needed to know that I had made bad choices and that God could save me and keep me safe. I gave my life to God, and that was being led by a girl who was 2 years older than me. And that was the beginning, and as the years have gone by, I've been stretched and grown in my faith. And it's funny, as you look back at that conversation, it was so simple and yet so profound. It's amazing that God can use children to do pretty big things. We forget just how much they can. And one of my life verses is Psalm 27, verses 13 to 14. I remain confident of this. I will see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait for the Lord, be strong and take heart, and wait for the Lord. This verse means a lot to me and has helped me navigate through some of the interruptions in my life. As I mentioned earlier, I grew up in a church and surrounded by loving Christians and very fortunate to know only the good things of our faith and church practices. I was surrounded by people who generally lived out their lives on serving God in every aspect of their lives. So the first part of that verse, knowing the goodness of God, was very easy for me for a very long time. I saw the goodness in the Lord. I was brought up to look for it, and He was good, so it wasn't hard to believe. And at one point while in Pakistan, I was fairly young. My parents took in a little boy that was struggling. He was failing to thrive and was wasting away, and his parents just didn't have the means to care for him. He was tiny, and I remember as a child thinking, that was pretty cool, that my parents could take in this little boy and quite literally fatten him up and send him back to his loving parents. My parents had an opportunity to be that goodness in this dark world that we live in, for this family to see God's handiwork. I thought that one day, hey, I want to do that. I want to care for children. So fast forward 25 odd years, and here I am, with 10 years of experience working on the general surgery floor at Sickest Hospital, caring for children born with digestive abnormalities as part of my job, and that causes kids to fail to thrive. So 25 years, then you saw the result. We loved living in Pakistan, but one of the first major interruptions in my life was when my parents decided we could no longer live there, and it was becoming too difficult for my mom's health. I can't remember exactly the number of back surgeries we're on, but 10 plus for sure. And living a lifestyle of sitting on the floor and even moving around Pakistan was getting far too difficult. But resettling here in Canada was challenging, as I had no friends. I was 11, and that's a hard time to move. We landed in Quebec, and in the school system, I should have been fairly fluent in French, but I didn't even know how to say bonjour. I had to go to French as a second language courses, and it was held at lunchtime. How rude. So we were there, and it was very discouraging. The goodness of God now seems so far away. We moved to Toronto in March of that school year, and we felt much more comfortable with the multicultural city that it was. We settled in and adjusted again, and we met friends, and I was really involved in the youth group, Summer Missions and School Christian Fellowship. And after high school, I went to university, and there I was faced with questioning God's goodness. There were suddenly all these people around me on placements that had horrible diagnoses, were given bad prognoses, and I was really struggling to see the point in life to see the point of life when it was so awful. Why would a good God let bad things happen? Why would He let someone's people struggle so much? And it wasn't until immersion school that I began to struggle with having a mom who had so many health issues. To be honest, it never really crossed my mind before then. And although she had health issues, I had never met someone so driven, so in love with God, and wanting to see others follow Him. Sure, she had to slow down a little bit, and couldn't do some of the other things like other moms do, like, you know, laundry. My dad did that. But I had a full life, and a full childhood, and a loving mom, and I didn't think anything of it. I wasn't struggling for it. I did question her pain. She just had so much of it, and she had to deal with it, but never let it get her down. But now in university, I was struggling with why God would let my mom suffer so much. I don't know all the answers, and that's for sure. But through the pain, I could see the goodness of God. He was there in the meals provided to our family, for the support we had in the loving church members, and he was there even in our darkest moments. I met Brent at church while volunteering, as you heard, in the junior high program. And we met, well, we didn't fall in love right away. That's just for the movies. But we did get engaged and married and have three kids. And as you say, the rest is history. We have enjoyed 10 years of marriage so far and look forward to many more to come. And if you ask me while I was in high school what I was going to do with my life, I would say I was going to be a missionary in a far-off country, and they would eat spicy food. I just added that. So when Mike and Janet posted that they eat curry the other day, I was in heaven. Aurelia is going to be okay. This was another interruption in my life. I met Brent, a very Canadian boy with no intentions on leaving the province, let alone the country. I did get him on a plane for our honeymoon, which was a goal in life, but I was at peace. God had redirected my life to living happily in Canada and loving the people here. There were needy people here, too. I was hired to work on the unit I consolidated on, and life was looking pretty good. We had our first child and was surrounded by loving people. What more could we ask for? We felt a stirring, and it was a slow stirring in our hearts, and it was me and then Brent and then together, that Brent needed to finish off his schooling at Tyndale, and the fastest way was to step down. But this was my church. He had come to my church. It was my childhood church. And as you can imagine, that change was really hard to swallow. He just had a kid, and I wanted him to be around people that loved him. But God knew that too, as Mike has told us. He doesn't forget that we have children. So the other verse that I like as well is Proverbs 3, verse 5 to 6. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he will make your path straight. I never knew how hard those verses were to follow until we stepped away from that church, from that comfort zone, and things in the next 2 years that followed had me questioning God's goodness and didn't trust that he would lead and guide us. In my human perspective, we had done everything right. Brent finished school, and so God should give us a job, career, ministry that would thrive, and we would do be all right. I was discouraged so many times, and it was hard to watch my husband that I loved struggle to find a job and to struggle with confidence. I wanted to fix it because I'm a nurse, and that's what we do, but I couldn't fix it, and I had to trust. Now I am a planner, and trust is not easy for me. I'm so internally grateful for the love and support I found in a local moms group, led by a lady with life experience and a passion for directing young moms to trusting God to lead and guide in their lives. And frequently during those years, I remember in the still moments the Holy Spirit whispering, trust and obey. We felt we trusted and were being obedient, but nothing was opening up. But still, I wanted to feel this need to trust and obey. Sometimes I said it jubilantly, but many times I said it with a clenched teeth and a doubtful heart. And we then had the opening, an amazing opportunity to work at Islington Baptist Church, where God answered our prayers for Nathan and now James. People would love them, and they would see the goodness of God through others. We were welcomed and loved and cared for, and almost never went a Sunday when our kids weren't scooped up, chased, and engaged by loving people. And some much-needed healing of our hearts began as well. God was good. Our lives were interrupted once again this summer, as we felt that during the spouse coverage, we were being led elsewhere. And after many years of searching for our next ministry, we had gotten discouraged. Initially, after Brent graduated with a GPA he had never heard of before, a good one, we would get excited. We would look up all the jobs. We would look up at the areas. We would research the schools because we have kids now. We would look at the housing, like just how things would go. Then we'd start the interview. We'd apply for the job. We'd wait. And it's different than most jobs because I'm a nurse. It's quick and easy. Usually you get it, you don't. Like 3 or 4 months at a time per job you interview for. So you get your heart set up, 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 and then it would be the dreaded no. So it would take a little bit of us every time, and it was hard to see God's goodness, and it was hard to trust that God knew what he wanted us to do. The memory verse you were working at the church so I jump around a little bit. Just before we left was Ezekiel 36, verse 26. I will give you a new heart and put a new spirit in you. I will remove from you your heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh. And I was sitting listening to Brent preach about this and was feeling very convicted. God wants us to have a heart of flesh that cares for the wounded and the hurt and not focus on our own hurt and discouragement. I feel like our time at Islington was time of rejuvenation. Now, I must admit that I had to email Brent to ask the question of what the verse was. I never did get good at remembering references. This is why you need to. So when we heard about the opportunity here at OCC, Brent told me about it after he had applied, sent his resume, and after he got called for an interview. So no matter what we say, we didn't look up schools, we didn't look up neighborhoods, we didn't look up anything. We can't say that we got here because of our own planning, our own strengths. We truly trust that we are here because we need to be. And we are ready to serve alongside you here at OCC and the community of Orillia. We're trusting and obeying and looking for the goodness of God here daily so that we can point others to Him. I'm learning to trust the details to God because He knows best. And I should probably say that I haven't read the whole Priscilla Shire book, so if I butchered it, I'm sorry. But it did seem fitting, and I'm very excited that once again God is taking care of me as well as Brett.
Great as a teacher in public speaking. So hopefully I won't cough on Rachel this part. So last few minutes, I'm just going to share a little bit about my own sort of ministry journey. As I mentioned earlier, I kind of entered ministry a little bit backwards and a little bit later than most people do. So I was given the opportunity to serve as a youth pastor at what was then called Wishing Well Acres Baptist Church, and since then they've changed the name to Grace Point a number of years ago, I was completely terrified. I really didn't know kind of what I was getting myself into, I don't think, and kind of what I was doing, and so I sought help from other local youth pastors and mentors to kind of help me along the way, and all I knew was that I loved God. I love coming alongside of teenagers and to see them sort of know who Jesus is and what He can do for their lives ultimately. And the thing that stood out really from that first year was a year-end evaluation that I did with, we had a team of student leaders with us. And maybe this talks about the low expectations the student leader had. But she said, you know, I thought it was better than I thought it would be. So that was sort of, you know, oddly enough, that was the reassurance that I kind of needed to think that, you know, maybe I can do this sort of youth pastor thing. And so I stayed on as youth pastor there for 10 years at Grace Point, and during my time, my ministry responsibilities expanded into children's ministry as well. And so some of the highlights, even just to kind of talk about some of the things that we were kind of, we were able to start a brand new VBS program that we ran in the summer and during March breaks, and being able to take our high school students on three different missions trips to the various places in the state. Worked with many other local youth ministries on events. We even did retreats together, and really developing and building a great, great volunteer ministry team to work alongside of, and then obviously ultimately to see students come to faith and to see them be able to journey alongside them and use their gifts to help the church. But sort of with all their highs that kind of go, the good things that you have, there unfortunately are times of lows as well. And one of the hardest things that I think I had to deal with during my time at Grace Point was the very unfortunate passing of one of our students. It was actually right around Halloween, 2010. We had a student who was a part of our ministry, but she had come to a party north of the city, and she was walking sort of along this dark road and seems like a really senseless death is that she was struck by a truck that was traveling down the road. And she was rushed to hospital, but the next day she had passed away. So that obviously leaves our students to question God. How could a loving God let this happen? Again, that kind of question, right? I don't know. I didn't know. I didn't have the answers at the time. Things just, you know, seemed like they're out of our control. But it really gave us an opportunity to come alongside and to help the group sort of see how God is also a comforter in our time of trouble, in our time of difficulties, and that God can heal sort of these deep wounds that they were experiencing at that time. And so our group grew closer together. Many of them stayed within the group searching, you know, they're searching for answers and wanting to know. And so God really, like I said, proved to be the ultimate comforter in these times. And so during my time at Grace Point, I started to think that maybe I could do this. I could do this all my life. I remember once saying that to Angela, thinking, you know what? You know, I went to a conference and they were talking about people who were, you know, in ministry, how long you've been in, you stand up, stand up, stand up. And there was some guy who had been doing it for like 40 years in youth ministry. And I said, Angela, I think I could do that. I could be like that guy and do. She's like, teenagers don't want like a 60-year-old youth pastor. I mean, come on. Anyhow. Still doing it. I'm not 60 yet, but still doing it. And so I thought, you know, if this is what God has called me to do, then what better thing to do is get some education. And so I started to go to Tyndale, and I went through, they have this modular program that you can kind of do stuff part-time, which I enjoyed, and I was doing it. And so we eventually, as Angela mentioned, felt God was calling us to a sort of a different change, a different season of our life. And so I went to school full-time. And I spent my entire year doing full-time studies to finish my BRE and graduated back in 2014. And so I spent an entire year seeking a new ministry position when I was finally contacted by Islington to come and lead their youth ministry. And the thing with Islington that Angela didn't mention was that they were going through their own tragedy. That they had gone through. They had a youth pastor who just a year prior to that was, I don't even really kind of know what you would call it, but he used to climb in sort of abandoned buildings and stuff like this, and even a couple of the guys who were part of the church were with him. And so he had gone into this building, put his hand on a live electrical thing, and obviously, unfortunately, was killed that day. And so as you can imagine, as a church and a youth group, they were suffering with the very tragic loss of their youth pastor, which is something very difficult for them to go through. And so a year had passed since his death, and they had asked if I would be willing to kind of come in. So that was part of our process at IBC, was to kind of help journey alongside of the students as they processed the passing of their former youth pastor. And so, I mean, yeah, it was a difficult sort of time, I think, at the beginning, but as we kind of spent a couple of years there, we really grew, and we loved it there. We learned how to do ministry different, in different ways than what we had been a part of at Grace Point. It wasn't any better, it wasn't any worse, it was just different. And we were accepted with welcome arms, and my time there really stretched me as well in new ways. I was given opportunities to preach once a month. And as I mentioned this past May, I had the opportunity to cover off the pastor as he took a 3-month sabbatical. And when I was hired on at IBC, it was always with the future in mind. They were a smaller church. They couldn't afford more than just small part-time hours. And so I took the position with the idea that I would learn and have opportunities to develop my skills. And so that brings us here to OCC. Ultimately, I'm hoping to bring those skills that I've learned and been working on for the last 14 years to really enhance God's kingdom work that he's doing in and through this church in Aurelia. And I also come with the mindset that every leader is a learner. And I'm looking forward to working with Pastor Mike and the leadership team here and to learn from them as well, and to think of and do ministry in really fresh new ways. And so when it comes to children's ministry, I'm kind of right now, my focus is working on thinking through new Sunday school curriculum that will ultimately help you as parents. And I firmly believe that the church and the family really need to partner together. that to me the Bible is clear that the ultimate responsibility of shepherding and leading kids to Christ is the responsibility of us as parents. And so my philosophy is, how can the church provide resources to help you as you lead your family and raise your kids to love God and to follow Jesus? And that's what I'm diligently working on in the coming weeks. I hope to come up here and tell you kind of where the direction of that is going and what the plan is that's going to make that happen. And so when it comes to youth ministry, the plan is obviously similar in that I want to help you lead your teenagers to fully follow God with their lives. And I think we can sort of accomplish that by really having a place where students feel that they belong. So whether that's students within the church or students outside of the church, there's been lots of opportunities to work with community kids in the past for me. And so that's where they feel a sense of ownership, a pride in the youth ministry, that this is their space. And then we kind of want to move them on to help them to believe that they move from a faith that lots of times as kids grow up, the faith belongs to mom and dad. That's their faith. That's not my faith. That's the family's faith. And so really, I think in this season of life is to help them take ownership of that faith, that they want to see them to become all that God has designed them to be, to help them grow in their walk with God and help them to see how God has gifted them and to get them to use those gifts ultimately into the church and the community. Sounds simple, right? No problem. Actually takes a lot of work, as you can imagine, and a lot of time, and it's something that I can't do on my own. And so there's already, I've had an opportunity to meet a number of you who are working in the children's ministry, but we're looking to add on to that as well. And right now, there's just me and Heidi in the youth ministry. So if you want to come alongside of us and join in for this faith journey of the kids and the students, I would love the opportunity to talk to you more about that, to find a place. And I'd love for you to find a place in maybe one of these ministries if you're interested in doing that. Thank you.
We pray that God will use this message to strengthen your faith and draw you into a deeper relationship with Jesus. If you are interested in other sermons or want to know more about Aurelia Community Church, please visit our website at www.occweb.org.